Good morning, my friends, and welcome to a fourth installment of the program this week. From very high above all the puerile and vacuous forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, firmly and permanently ensconced behind the silver Cowboy State Politics microphone and broadcasting to you from the depths of the middle swamp in Wyoming's capital of Cheyenne. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to the program. Happy Thursday. This is a first on the program. Four shows in 4 days. Well, just a little tiny milestone, and we've still got Weekend Update coming on Saturday. I told you that when I came down to the middle swamp, I was going to work my little tail off, and I meant it. So far, this program and the Independence Network have worked circles around all of the other Wyoming media outlets, the so-called journalists. If they were journalists, they would have picked up on at least one of the big stories that we've brought you these last 2 weeks. I have to tell you, my friends, it is absolutely my pleasure. I know that you've been listening because I can see the numbers from all of the programs. And I just have to tell you, thank you for listening to the program. It makes what I do all that much more important to me. And I know that this probably sounds quaint, but it's how I truly feel. That you have no idea the big place in my heart that you take up. That I can sit down behind my microphone whenever I want and just talk to you. Publish an episode, and I know that when I look at it again, there will be hundreds of people that have listened to it. In some cases, thousands. So anyhow, thank you. On this morning's program, I've got a great interview with my very good friend, Representative Ken Pendergraft. You know, it's funny, when the legislature's not in session, all of the time, we're doing something. I pretty much talk to him every single day, and we're figuring out shows and interviews. But when we get down here to Cheyenne, it's really hard for me to catch up with him. And that's because he works really hard at representing his constituents, and he doesn't have a lot of time. So I really appreciate the time he had tonight to sit down and visit with me. Before I play that for you, we should probably pay some bills. This special installment of Cowboy State Politics is brought to you by the Buffalo Wool Company. They're the purveyors of the warmest socks that you'll ever put on your feet. Just go to their website, thebuffalowoolco.com, and get you a pair. Trust me, you are not going to be disappointed. Today's program is also brought to you by Rebecca Bextel at Compass Real Estate. If you're thinking about buying or selling property, you need a real estate agent that you can trust. That agent is Rebecca Bextel. Give her a call. Her phone number is 307-699-3519. She's lived in Jackson for over 20 years, and she's got her fingers on the pulse of the real estate market all the way from Devil's Tower to the Tetons, from Yellowstone National Park down here to the swamp. Last year, she sold about $25 million worth of property. And get this, the cool thing about Rebecca is she's been known to talk buyers out of a piece of property simply because it didn't meet their needs. I've never heard of a real estate agent that would do that. So if you're thinking about buying a house or selling a piece of property, give Rebecca a call. Her phone number, again, is 307-699-3519. So anyhow, I caught up with Ken, and I wanted to ask him about the big tax bills that everybody's been talking about. Ken is a real big proponent of homeschool, and there was an education savings account bill that he voted for that I wanted to talk to him about, and also give him some time to talk about the death of Officer Krenke. So we did all of that. It's a great interview. Here it is. Ken, how's the session going?
Long.
That's all you have to say is long.
You know, for no more strength than we've got, we number somewhere around a couple of dozen, 22 to 24 pretty consistently. We've done fairly well. I mean, just to think off the top of my head, 125, which was the gun-free zones, we expected to get it through the House, but we did not expect to get it through the House virtually unscathed.
Well, I don't know about unscathed. There was the Washit Amendment to
it. I did say virtually.
I'm actually pretty concerned about that amendment. And I think that the Senate will probably catch it. And Joey and I talked about it on the morning program.
But it says that you can't open carry, display, or wear. Well, the problem is, when you carry a concealed weapon, are you not wearing it?
I'm not.
Well, I'm not right now, but... All right, Ken.
Yeah, I'm quite sure that we've got a good bunch of guys over there in the Senate. There's 17 that have been solidly conservative all during this session.
Surprisingly so.
Yeah. Well, it's an election year.
Well, that's true, and there's a reason why we run gun bills in the budget session.
Precisely.
So, Ken, the reason I wanted to have you on is there's a couple of bills that are pretty much on everybody's mind right now. Some of them have failed. Some of them are still going on. And I thought I'd have you on the program and just talk with you.
Sure.
I mean, we've been down here for 3 weeks, and I haven't got to talk to you at all. So.
Yeah, it's true. You know, we spend a fair amount of time in communication during our normal lives, and we get up here, and I have to kind of do a double take. Do I remember that guy?
Well, let's start with 203. I mean, okay. there's a fair amount of controversy online about that one. Have you got any flack about that?
Very little. At first, there was a lot of pressure. Support it, support it, support it. But it went through 3 readings and 23 amendments. 23 amendments. There were 3, and then there were 12, and then there were 8. And one of the things that I saw in it right off the bat was, okay, we have a 2-cent raise in sales tax. So we're raising taxes over here. And that's the stick. The carrot on the other side was, we're going to have a $1 million exemption limit, meaning unless you have a home over $1 million, you're not going to pay any property tax. But we're going to leave that entire structure intact. That's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know for absolute certain that the sales tax is never going to go away.
No.
And as soon as the sales tax, and actually when you looked at it carefully and you look at the LSO's projections, they were short. They based it on a flat that nobody's buying habits would change.
Oh, I see.
But you take, like up there in Sheridan where we're at, if you add 2-cent sales tax here, people are going to buy a little bit at home. But when it's time to do major purchases or...
They're going to Billings.
Yeah, they're going to Billings. And so you're going to see a taper. It may not be dramatic, but you're going to see a taper. And they never considered that into the factor. So as soon as it came to the point where it said, you know what, we're going to need more money, the first thing they were going to do, I predicted, was lower that threshold from $1 million, and then they probably, I think I've told people, well, they'll say $300,000, figuring that we'll be able to settle at maybe $750,000, and like a little bargain. And lo and behold, it wasn't 24 hours, and they dropped it to $200,000.
Gee, who saw that coming?
Oh. So it was basically just a trap. There are certain people in that house that have been there for a long time that have desperately wanted to increase taxes, and this was... In my view, it was nothing but a ploy to do that, and it became readily apparent as the amendments came rolling in that they had no intention of doing us any favors. I even said at one point from the House floor, you know, there's another factor that could go into this, and we could just stop spending so much.
That was great. That was a great point that you made. The other one that I really liked. And I don't, correct me because I'm not going to get the phraseology right on it, but you stood up and basically you said, can anybody explain to me what's going on with this thing?
Yeah, they had been, there were 8 on the 3rd reading. There were 8 sweeping amendments. So you would look at it and it would say, delete the Zwanitzer 2nd reading amendment number 4, and then delete this, and then add this, and add this. And about 6 of those came in rapid succession. And like I said from the floor, I consider myself reasonably intelligent. I had no idea where we were
standing. I don't think anybody in there had any idea.
Here's a little bit of behind-the-scenes stuff. As you know, I got moved, so I'm sitting over by Steve Harshman.
I'm sorry.
No, actually, I'm enjoying it.
Okay.
I kind of am, because most people never give him any kickback. So I leaned over at him and I said, I see a lot of amendments here on third reading. And he said, yeah. And I said, well, a wise old legislator, a lot of experience, told me when I was here for the very first time and we were doing orientation, that you see a bill come up and it gets there on third reading and there's still amendment after amendment coming, you know that that bill's just not ready for prime time and you should just trash it. And he said, oh, I completely disagree with that. Steve, you're the one that told us that. And I actually later got to go up and kind of relate that on the floor. And you could just see the relief on a number of people's faces when I stood up there and said, I don't even know what this does anymore. And I think it went down 45 no votes.
Yeah, I mean, there was no way that thing was going to pass.
It was a trap from the beginning, and the longer it played out, the more obvious it became. So good riddance. Although there's some intriguing ideas in that bill, and I think some of those will percolate into some sort of reform down the road, but not in the 10-day period.
One of the problems that I had with it, and you know, there's been several people going back and forth with me online, is that there's a significant portion of our population that doesn't own a home. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's right around 30% of Wyoming citizens rent, or they live with other people. Well, a sales tax is the most regressive tax that we have, and it affects those people who have lesser means to a greater degree than anybody else. And we're talking about the people that, you know, for them, $5 is kind of a lot of money. It can be. Maybe to you and me, $5 is nothing. But for some folks, when you jack up sales tax 2%, well, that hits everything. So there's that part. And then my other big argument with it was construction costs.
Yeah. Construction costs, minerals, extractive industries. You know, you think about the sales taxes that they have to pay on a number of things. It's one thing if you're just going downtown and buying a pair of shoes.
Yeah, that's not the big industries that we're talking about.
Quite another if you're a farmer, rancher, you need to go down and you got to buy a new combine, whatever. You know,
cars.
Yeah.
Or look at it this way. You know, throughout the session, there's been a number of projects that they've talked about. I've pretty much lost count. Well, if you add a 2% sales tax, you are artificially increasing the price of all of those projects 2%. Mm-hmm. So if you look at towns like Claremont, if Claremont needs a water line, you know, I bet there isn't 200 people that live there. And so they have to come up with matching funds for that project. So you've artificially increased its price 2%. So the very people you're trying to help with easing property taxes are the very people you're going to hurt.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that one, and you voted, how did you vote on that one?
I voted no.
Okay. Good job.
Yeah. I voted no every time. And that first time, you know, when it first came up, I did get a little bit of flack and a little bit of pushback, and some from some pretty conservative friends. And saying, no, you got to reconsider this. Several of the conservative legislators, no, we need to give this a chance. But there are certain things that my instinct tell me aren't worth the risk.
And most of the time, I would say your instincts are pretty spot on.
So well, thank you.
Let's talk about another tax bill, the one that actually passed the House. Another, in my opinion, another problematic bill is House Bill 45. What do you think of that one?
Well, I did vote for it in hopes that maybe we could make it a little bit less toxic. Make no mistake, it's not a relief bill.
No.
This increases taxes. And we're at the kind of the peak of home values. And it says, okay, we're going to raise them basically 5% from here on in. And it's only on the structure. So we tried to expand that and correct things. And let me go back to it's only on the structure. If assessors know they can only raise the primary residence portion of that structure 5%, but they've got to come up with a certain amount of money, what are they going to do when they start looking at outbuildings, they start looking at other associated lands and items? They're going to make up whatever they have to make up. That's one of the hardest things for a lot of people to believe about this body. They cannot cut.
No.
Not even feasible. Anytime you talk about, and they use the term spend, if you're going to allow the taxpayers to keep
bizarre.
Something, it's what are we going to spend? There is no thought whatsoever about could we not spend on something else. If we're going to move money around, if we're going to give somebody a tax break, and that's how they look at it, we give them a tax break, then you have to backfill it. You can't possibly come up with any other answer.
Okay, so let's talk about, since we're right in the middle of this, they do have a spending problem. What's the number that the House spent?
Well, between, and I don't have the papers in front of me.
Would you like a copy?
I don't necessarily remember them, but I'll give you a pretty close. In order to keep the government running about as it has been, we needed to have about $8.5 billion, I think it was, in a biennial. The difference between where the House is and where the Senate is $1.1 billion. So the Senate basically cut a bunch. The House basically spent a bunch. And right now we're, like I said, about $1.1 billion. So they've got the JCC, we call it. These guys are focused on the, I say guys, there's Trey Sherwood's in there, so that's not fair. But their job is to try to come to some sort of a meet in the middle. So we got this conference committee going. And if they fail, then there's a very good chance that we will be looking probably in May at a special session to start hashing this stuff out again. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think if we have to go home and people say, how come you couldn't come up with a budget? Say, because the House wanted to spend the gob.
$1.129 billion.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's a, frankly, that's a complicated figure in the way that you look at. But there's a big difference there in where we are. The Senate has been pretty conservative in their approach, and they're trying to be solid and stick solid. It's very interesting because the president of the Senate, Ogden Driscoll, appointed, I think it's five, pretty conservative
people.
Yeah. They're led by Dave Kinski, who is this year.
Well, it's an election year.
Yeah.
You know, I've been telling people all week long on the program that when it's an election year, the joke in Sheridan is, hey, who's the guy in the Kinski suit?
Yeah.
And
but to his credit, he's done a very good job this year.
He's done a great job.
He really has. And he's got Tim Salazar there with him, who's a good, solid conservative, who also has been on appropriations, so those two guys. And then they got three of the most conservative guys in the Senate, in Troy McKeown and Anthony Bouchard and Dan Larson. And if those guys will simply play it cool, follow Dave's lead, and stand strong and not make a big fuss, it's going to be really fun to watch, because on the House side, we have five members of the Appropriations. And if you look at, for example, evidence-based Wyoming, these are five of the most liberal people there, Republican Democrat, there are.
In fact, Bob Nicholas, I would have to look, but there's one of them that's actually less conservative than a Democrat.
Well, Nicholas is. I don't know what the numbers there say, but he definitely is. There were only two, I think it was, gun-free zones. There were only two Republicans.
Yeah, it was my pal Bill Henderson and Bob Nicholas.
Yeah, what a pair.
All right, well, let's kind of move on. I mean, we've kind of beaten this whole tax thing to death. At least I have.
Well, I'm sick of it.
Well, you ought to be sick of it. I got to tell you, today, Ken, I tried to stick it out with you in the House, but it was such a snoozer. I was done.
It was torture. We were talking about moving money from one fund to another and the relative merits of of interest rates and how to do investments and all that. And it was tough.
All right. So let's kind of talk about something that might be a little bit more difficult. We're all going home early this week because Officer Cranky was killed in the line of duty. And so we're all going home early so we can be there for the funeral. So I want you to just talk to me, give me your thoughts on that whole thing, and then we'll talk about the budget amendment that was passed.
There is a close kindred mindset between first responders, especially peace officers, sheriff's deputies, and soldiers. There's a little bit of a different attitude. You know, I made a pretty good soldier. My attitude was shoot first and ask questions later. But cops can't do that. And having been in stressful situations and understanding a little bit what that was like when you knew full well you could defend yourself at the drop of a hat, very, very different than when you're a police officer out there who is charged with not only keeping the peace, but keeping everybody safe, including somebody who means you harm. And this young officer had, I believe, a five-month-old child.
Yeah, young baby. And I think Mark told me last night there's another one on the way.
And you look at what they face in all the whirlwind and the flurry, and, you know, there's going to be, I don't know how many people are going to be at the Golden Dome for this thing. I've heard that there's supposed to be 1,000 police officers from around the country that are coming in to go to this. Most of the Sheridan legislators are coming back. I think Dave Kinski's going to be stuck here because of the conference committee. They're actually taking the state plane that I tried to sell and flying several of them back. But I had to say I'm going to drive because I couldn't be duplicitous in that thought. But our heart goes out to these folks. And I think one of the things that is we all need to bear in mind as a community that our memories as a group are fairly fleeting. It won't be very long and we'll move on to the next interesting story or whatever. And this family's still going to be there suffering. And I think we need to remember them and continue to support them as long as we possibly can.
Well, there was a budget amendment that was brought by our pal, Cyrus Western. Well, pal is the wrong word, but by Representative Cyrus Western. And basically, it was to increase her benefit to 100% of her husband's salary.
Actually, originally it was 100. They cut it to 90 when it came to the floor. So originally she would have had 62%, and they bumped it to 90%. And this goes on in perpetuity until her death. She would draw that wage. And it comes out of a fund that is a retirement fund that has been paid into and built up by first responders.
All right, so how'd you vote on that one?
It was a tough one. There is one side of you. I'll cut to the chase. I voted yes. There were several factors that go into that. One is you don't want to make a decision based on emotion. Another one is, okay, for every one here that we're focusing on in this case, there are a dozen other people who were killed and other, and you don't necessarily do the same for them. And so the conservative, fair side of me says this is probably not a good idea. We shouldn't do this just as a knee-jerk emotional reaction and a show of grace, or, you know, don't let any tragedy go to waste. But, you know, there were two things Art Washit pointed out. I didn't like the perpetuity, and I spoke up against that and said, you know, this is one of those things that for a period of time, perhaps, but we don't know how long he might have stayed on the police force. We don't know, even if they would have, God forbid, had an unsuccessful marriage, and what would play into that? We just don't know in situations like this. But I was reminded by Representative Washit that soldiers, if are killed in the line of duty, their spouse gets those benefits in perpetuity. So that kind of, that tainted that argument in my mind a little bit. And the other thing that was pointed out was, and I mentioned it earlier, this fund was put together by those people. And so I thought to myself, if I went and polled all the other police officers, and this is their money, what do I think they would say? And there's no doubt in my mind that they would say, look, this is that, that fund, by the way, and I don't remember the numbers on it, but it is hugely funded. There is no lack whatsoever. So it's their money. And I thought, you know, this is probably what they would do. And I did go ahead and vote yes to take care of this gal in that case.
I won't beat you up too much about that one.
I'm because, a bit of a softy at times.
You know, for sitting in the gallery, and if you and I talk about this a lot of the, a lot of times, I have the luxury of being able to sit behind my microphone and say, no, no, this is the conservative vote. And it's a very different thing sitting down there on the floor.
Well, one of the things that came to my mind is a friend of mine who now lives in Thermopolis. And after the Gulf War, her husband never really properly adjusted and died. And I think about her with a little child and the situation she was in for a while. And I do have a heart.
No, I get it. That's it's a tough vote. And, you know, I just interviewed a friend of ours last night, and he voted a different way. And, you know, his position, and he said it on the program, is that, you know, there are, that government, it's not the proper role of government to be in the charity business. And the example, and an example of that is, we hadn't even talked about this as a church. Yet we drove home last weekend so that we could go to church. We were there for a grand total of 18 hours, I think. And we walked in, and there was already cards that were printed for Mrs. Krinke. And we hadn't even talked about it that as a church. And anytime that we're doing any sort of charitable thing, we have a meeting. And we say, hey, you know, we want to help this person or this group or whatever. And there is no doubt in my mind that when that question comes up, that the answer will be yes.
Oh, yeah.
And in my mind, and again, I'm not the guy sitting down there on the floor. You are. In my mind, you know, it's charity is best left to communities and to churches and to charitable organizations. But nonetheless, I mean, it's a hard vote. And
let me back up just a little bit, though, because when that amendment first came out, you might remember that it got divided. And the first part of that was to take a sum of money, and I don't remember how much that was either, out of the general fund and dump it into this to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
I would not have voted for that.
No, I don't think you would have.
That goes along with Mark's argument that it's not the role of government to do that, to take other people's money without considering who those other people are. Many of them have lost loved ones as well. But that amendment was divided, and the first part was defeated, so there were no general funds going into this fund. This is a fund, as I've said a couple of times, that was put together by those people to take care of themselves. And it was, we talk a lot about retirement funds or funds for that. This was well over 100% funded. There was no danger whatsoever that anybody was going to be left hurting because of this. So maybe that's a little bit of justifying a thing, but all those factors went into my mind.
Sure. The only other problem I have with it is it's a budget amendment, which means it's only good for 2 years. Yeah. And so, you know, in 2 years' time, the legislature is going to have to take it up again. And, you know, like you said, memories fade. So, well, let's switch gears a little bit here. And there was another kind of controversial bill that came up that you said that you wanted to talk about, and that's House Bill 166, the ESA bill.
Yeah, education savings accounts. A lot of conservatives look at this thing and they see the danger in the strings that are attached to the money. And I certainly see that. When this thing first came out, we worked very hard to get it amended through the committee so that it carved out or cut out homeschoolers from that, because there are a lot of homeschoolers that are of the opinion that they don't want, they got out for reason.
Yeah.
And they don't want or need the money, and they didn't want any opportunity for government and regulations and oversight and all that to infiltrate what they're doing. And we got that firewall put up. So now we're talking primarily about private schools, parochial schools, other things like that. There were two trees in the garden. There was a tree of life. There was the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And God said to Adam and Eve, don't eat off that tree, it'll kill you. But he didn't bar them from it. He gave them liberty. He gave them the opportunity to fail. And I believe that you cannot succeed without the opportunity to fail. It's just, that's how it works. There are a lot of people who are not particularly interested in the social aspects, as a lot of Christian homeschoolers, for example, might be. They simply don't like the way that public schools work, and they want to try something different. My advice to any private school board, to any parochial school, don't eat of the tree. That money is going to come with strings, and you saw it there in the debate. As soon as they started talking about, okay, we're going to give this money that's going to follow the student. Well, we got to have restraints on it. We got to make sure that they're teaching the right way, the right things. And you're going to add into that DEI. You're going to add in all this other crap,
which they did.
Yeah. And yet, following what I think is God's pattern and a vote for liberty, you have the choice to make a stupid mistake if you want to. These people that maybe aren't worried about some of the diversity, equity, and inclusion or whatever, they just want a different way to do school, they're taxpayers too.
Correct.
And so there's a factor in that. There's also another side is this takes some money out of the control of the education monstrosity. And I kind of like that aspect of it.
My biggest problem with it is Article 3, Section 36. Well, actually, I have a couple of constitutional problems with it, but the biggest one is Article 3, Section 36, that the state cannot give any money to anyone unless it is under the absolute control, and that's a direct quote.
It says 100%.
Absolute control of the state. So, in other words, you're taking money to put your kids in a situation that you just tried to get your kids out of. Said that all of this DEI stuff, and I can't remember all the amendments that were put on that thing, but it was a lot of them.
One of the interesting ones was the demand that you teach the Constitution. Well, in my experience, which has been out there for quite a while, most of these private schoolers teach the Constitution far better than the public schools ever did. But if you look carefully at the wording, it has to do with teaching the Constitution our way so that you understand it according to our interpretation. You can't teach the Constitution your way. You've got to follow this pattern that we've set. Very devious. Again, you know, if you think you just got to have that $1,000, $5,000 or whatever it works out to when it's all said and done, good riddance, but
I think that bill was very devious. It was another attempt to, well, first of all, Albert Sommers had his own ESA bill that died a quick death, and deservedly so.
Yeah, he wanted to add preschool, and that's another aspect to this one. He wanted to add preschool, which is basically expanding welfare for ages 3 and 4. This bill does, and it's one of the things that I hate most about it, it does expand it down to age 4, but it cut off age 3. Splitting hairs a little bit there, not a good thing. But again, I opted toward the liberty side. Also, not afraid to say it, I received a ton of pressure from back home. We want this. We want this.
Okay.
And it's a little bit, I think, of Moses coming down off the mountain and the children of Israel out there with their golden calf because that's what they wanted. Your children sometimes.
Well, I know what my fiance said about the legislature, and she called y'all children.
Well, she's not far from the truth.
So okay, so let's hit the nail on the head. How'd you vote on that one?
I voted for the ESA, and I voted for the ESA as a vote for liberty. This is your taxpayer money. You say you want it. I'm telling you, you don't really want that. I'll tell you a real quick story. I started to mention your children. I was sitting at the TV years ago when my son Seth, who's now in his 40s, and he was very young. He was probably 4. And I had some chips and some jalapeno sauce. And he walked up to me and he said, "I like cheese." I said, "Yeah, but you don't want this cheese." "I like cheese." "No,
okay.
No, Seth, you don't want this cheese." "I like cheese." So I dipped it up, gave him a big scoop. He puts his mouth and pretty goes, "What?" Sometimes you kind of have to give somebody what you know they don't need to get it out of their system, I guess.
Well, I hope they get it out of their system quickly because that bill, I mean, I got to tell you, Ken, I was sitting in the gallery watching that, and I'm like, this is a no vote straight away. And you brought up the debate about the Constitution, and that one, and if I recall correctly, that happened pretty early on in the debate. And I started hearing, "Oh no, you have to teach," and I don't remember the exact words they used, but you put it aptly, that you're going to have to teach it our way. And I'm like, "Well, no, hold on."
And the same thing is going to go with LGBTQ issues. You know, your social studies are going to have to comply with the way they approve it. And if you want to try to teach your children in a godly, biblical way, that's just not going to fly.
No, it's not. And you know, the same arguments that I had against Albert's ESA bill, I mean, they pretty much apply there.
Yeah.
And what the Redcoats did is they turned that bill into pretty much not a carbon copy, but it was pretty darn close to Albert's bill.
That's what they do to pretty much everything. They will trot it out as, "Here's the answer to your prayer. You guys have been saying you want this." There's a bill coming out of the Senate right now having to do with red flags, and it's completely toothless. It doesn't do anything.
Isn't that one ironic?
Isn't it? Yeah. And they do that, and then they throw a few amendments in there, and I like to use the analogy, they lace it with fentanyl. And so then we have to go home, and they say, "Well, why didn't you vote for the XYZ bill that would have eliminated all property taxes?" Well, because that's not what it did.
There's one more thing I want to ask you about, and of course, you haven't been home yet, have you?
No.
Okay, so have you heard about the story of legislators getting mysterious packages in the mail?
That is true. Our mail is being held at the post office until we get there. I'm headed home, then I'll pick it up Friday morning. But everybody that I've talked to that on the conservative side has received them.
Yeah, I think Mark got a couple of them, and they're all from, one of them had a postmark from like England, and one of them was from some other country. I just wanted to ask you if you knew if you had received one yet or.
No, I'm anticipating seeing that, and I'll just turn it directly over to the sheriff's department there.
I think what you probably ought to do is put on a pair of sterile gloves.
I'll just have my wife do it.
Ken.
It's a joke.
All right. Well, we've we've pretty much eaten up about 35 minutes. Is there anything else you want to talk about tonight?
I will be glad to get home. I'll be really interested to see what the JCC, what they do with trying to make a budget out of this mess. And to tell you the truth, I'm kind of secretly hoping that they have a hung jury.
Me too.
And that we have to come back in May. And in the meantime, people are going to be saying, how come you didn't get a budget done? They won't be able to say, how come you didn't do something about property taxes? Because there are some things going through that will provide some immediate relief. What we have yet to do is to come up with something that we can actually get passed. Tony Locke had a magnificent bill that just got stomped on that actually does some reform and put us back on the right track and make sure we don't find ourselves in these shoes anymore. But
well, we've got the convention to go home to. That's going to be fun, right?
Yeah, we get to fight the Article 5 convention argument again.
Yeah,
that'll be fun.
That's going to be fun. We've got, of course, Sheridan County's got the whole GOP thing going, so that ought to be a pretty interesting Saturday. Well, Ken, I appreciate you taking the time. I know it's really late and you've been working really hard, and I just want to tell you that I think that you've been doing a great job.
Thank you. That means a lot coming from you. You have pretty high standards.
I do. You haven't hit the high bar yet, mister.
No, and some people tell me if I hit the high bar, I probably won't get reelected.
All right. Thanks again, Ken.
You bet. Thank you.
That'll about do it for this Thursday installment of the program. If it hasn't already become abundantly clear, there's a ton of content coming from Cowboy State Politics, and you don't want to miss any of it. Make sure that you subscribe and follow the program. You can do that from the website, cowboystatepolitics.com, or anywhere that you get your podcasts. But for now, from the depths of the Middle Swamp in Wyoming's capital of Cheyenne, I'm David Iverson, and this is the one and only Cowboy State Politics.